I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane's law license has been suspended temporarily by the state Supreme Court. And this week, the Pennsylvania Senate has convened a bipartisan panel to determine whether she can be removed from office. She's been charged with revealing secret grand jury information and lying about it under oath, and later charged with a second count of perjury, all allegations she denies. She's released a cache of crude and degrading emails attributed to Supreme Court Justice Michael Akins the day her license was suspended, underscoring her charge about Pennsylvania's old boy network out to get her. We asked Chuck Ardo, Kathleen Kane's spokesman, to join us on Radio Times. He's pulled over at a rest stop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And Chuck Ardo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Happy to be with you.
How can Pennsylvania have an attorney general without a law license?
Well, I mean, that's the $64,000 question. There are any number of opinions. The Attorney General believes that she can perform the vast majority of her duties despite the suspension of her license. She believes that most of her duties are either administrative or ministerial, and that they don't require her to make any legal decisions.
Has that changed? And now that her license is officially temporarily suspended, has she actually changed her duties, or have those duties continued? It's just that she doesn't need a law license to do them as she sees it.
No. She can no longer make any decision that might require a lawyer. You know, decisions as to how to proceed with cases may be affected by her suspension. Again, there are a number of different opinions as to exactly how limited she may be, but in her view, she can set policy, and as long as she does not make specific legal decisions, she is well within her rights.
Does that include releasing emails? Does she see that as part of her administrative duties or her legal duties?
Well, the emails that got released last week were actually released in response to a statement and release of a letter by the Judicial Conduct Board. The Judicial Conduct Board released a statement last Friday, a week ago, reiterating its decision to exonerate Justice Akin. In that statement, they said that they had seen the emails and found them to be unremarkable. The Attorney General felt compelled to release the emails that the Judicial Conduct Board had seen to allow people to make up their own opinion as to whether they were offensive or not.
Chuck, let me ask you about some of the timing of the release of these emails. When her license was suspended temporarily after being charged with perjury for leaking this grand jury information to a reporter and then lying about it, she released some emails, and she released some last week as well. There's a question about sort of the timing of the release of these emails. Can you help us understand that?
Well, I mean, I can certainly help you understand the timing last week, and as I said, that was strictly in response to a statement and release by the Judicial Conduct Board. And as far as the release of emails earlier in her administration, that was before my time.
Let me ask you about this bipartisan panel. It's been convened by the Senate earlier this week. They have 30 days to decide whether they can remove Kathleen Kane from office. The governor has called for her to resign. Others have called for her to resign. Are there any conditions under which she would resign?
Well, she continues to maintain her innocence and believes that both the governor and the legislature are acting prematurely, that the legal process ought to work itself out before anybody takes any kind of action.
So I
apologize.
No, go ahead.
I mean, she doesn't feel that there's a need to resign because she believes she is innocent.
So wait until there's a jury verdict with a trial?
Correct.
And I'm getting ahead of myself here, but would she abide by that jury verdict even if it doesn't go in her favor?
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to predict, but I imagine she would. She is a lawyer and a law enforcement officer. I think that if she were to be found guilty and at that point would have to make a decision.
She talks about this old boys network, this old boys club in Pennsylvania as her spokesman. How does she, you know, I realize you're speaking for the attorney general. What does she mean by that? I mean, we're certainly that the emails are evidence that she has been offering that there is an old boys network in Pennsylvania. What else has she seen or what else have you seen?
Well, I think that what she has seen and what is beginning to be clear to a lot of people is that there is a chummy relationship between judges, prosecutors, and a number of lawyers that is troublesome in that they seem to have social relationships that may affect their ability to be impartial and do their jobs.
Are they out to get her?
Well, I think her point of view is that they have been out to prevent her from making the case, that they have had this relationship.
The release of the emails, as I mentioned earlier, sort of seem timed to certain of charges against the attorney general. Does she see a connection there that somehow these crude, scatological, pornographic, racist, as I understand it, even misogynist emails, that has something to do with the charges against her, including things like perjury?
No, but she does think that the charges against her are a byproduct of this network of people who have been sending these inappropriate emails. She believes that if it were not for their attempt to keep secret this network, that the charges would have never been brought in the first place.
The charges of her leaking grand jury information and lying about it, things like that?
Right, all of it. The reality is that very few people get prosecuted for the things that she is being prosecuted for. Whether that's right or wrong is a different debate. But it is unusual for anyone to be prosecuted for perjury in a grand jury case.
Are you saying she doesn't take that seriously?
No, I'm not saying that at all. Of course she takes it seriously. She's facing serious sanctions. What I am saying is she believes that this network of people who have been sending around all these questionable emails for years were intent on undermining her to keep their network from becoming public, and certainly from the content of these emails from becoming public.
There's a story in this morning's Morning Call. This is a very complicated story, I should say, to our listeners, this whole allegations involving the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. But nonetheless, you're quoted in the story, Chuck, talking about the fact that her office is reviewing all grand juries. What are they reviewing them for? What are they looking for?
Well, the morning call story was somewhat incorrect. They're reviewing grand jury communications in response to reviews being conducted by judicial oversight bodies to ensure that there was no improper communication between judges and lawyers.
Is she looking for Frank Fina's name?
No more than any other name they are looking at all judges and all prosecutors. So Frank Fina would certainly be among those, but they are not looking particularly for Frank Fina.
You are, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck Ardo, I think the seventh spokesman for Kathleen Kane. Do I have that right?
I'm not sure, but I know there was a significant number before me.
Well, first of all, how is she holding up?
Well, she's holding up okay. I mean, it's stressful, as you can well imagine.
And how about you?
I am holding up. And again, it is stressful, as you can well imagine. This job is very different from what I anticipated. As you or some of your listeners may know, I worked for Ed Rendell for a number of years, and I was accustomed to a certain amount of stress, but this is very different.
So what happens next? About a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, Chuck, what happens next? Obviously, this panel convened by the Senate is looking into whether they can or Kathleen Kane can be removed. Is that the next sort of big thing that she's her office and she's looking at?
Yeah, she believes strongly that what the Senate is doing violates the Constitution. The Constitution provides that if a elected official commits an impeachable offense, then they need to follow the impeachment process, that direct removal is not applicable in this particular case.
Well, it's been, I'm sure, as you have said, Chuck Ardo, a stressful time for you and kind of an amazing time, I think, for people in Pennsylvania who have been following this story. Thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're
have a good day.
You too, Chuck. And that's Chuck Ardo, a spokesman for Attorney General Kathleen Kane. We'll be talking about all those ads you've been seeing on television, a very feisty debate between the seven candidates all vying to sit on Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. You've probably noticed some negative, even incendiary ads on TV targeting candidates running for the three openings on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. A lot of money is being spent in this high-stakes race. There haven't been three openings on the high court in hundreds of years. Joining us now is Chris Potter, staff writer covering the election for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Chris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
How much money has been spent or is being spent? Do you have the final tallies yet?
Yeah, I mean, we won't have the final tallies until Election Day, and I would expect these campaigns to continue right up through then. One of the organizations, the Republican State Leadership Committee, which is airing ads targeting Philadelphia's very own Kevin Daugherty, has said they intend to spend $1 million on that ad and another one. So that gives you a kind of sense of how much money is at stake here. There's another organization called Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform spending money to attack the Republicans in the race. So those are the two organizations that we're hearing the most from.
In fact, we'll be playing ads from each of them. Are we seeing an increase in campaign spending because we have three, historic three openings on this court?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I haven't gone back yet and looked to see, you know, in previous races how much money is being spent as opposed to in years past. But obviously, you've got more candidates, and the stakes are high. We're really talking about the partisan balance of this court going forward, potentially for many years. So this is a big battle, and we're seeing the outside groups weigh in as well, which is also sort of inflating the numbers.
And we should add that the Republicans have controlled the Supreme Court for 16 years, and now with three openings, I guess that's an opening for the Democrats in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, depending on how this goes, either party could end up with a 5-2 majority on the court going forward. And if depending on how the numbers shake out, that majority could hold through the 2020 census, after which there'll be redistricting, which the Supreme Court plays an important part in. So we're not just talking about the court here. We're also talking about the legislative branch and how that shapes up into the 2020s as well.
So much focus on Citizens United, how that has affected campaign spending. But looking at Pennsylvania and looking at judicial races, are people allowed to give unlimited amounts of money?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the one thing we've got going for us in Pennsylvania is the campaign rules have always been this bad, so you don't really feel it quite as much. And in fact, there have been outside ads in these races before. Michael Eakin, years back, won his race with a little bit of help from an outside group called the Law Enforcement Alliance, I think, who waged some negative attacks on his Democratic opponent, Kate Ford Elliott, way back then. So this isn't exactly unprecedented, but it is absolutely the case you can give as much money as you want to a candidate. What these outside groups allow you to do that is a little different, and this is especially true in the Republican side, is you as a corporation can give money directly to these independent expenditure groups right out of your general operating fund or whatever. You can't do that in Pennsylvania. You can't give money like that directly to a candidate. So this allows some of these organizations, these corporations, to spend money right from their funds and have a voice without running afoul of the state law.
You have mentioned the Republican State Leadership Committee, and let me play an attack ad. This is sponsored by the Republican State Leadership Committee. It's called Factual, and it calls out Pennsylvania Supreme Court candidate Kevin Dougherty for a decision he made in a 2002 custody case. Let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk about it.
When Philadelphia Judge Kevin Dougherty failed to protect a child,
her hell began at 10. When
tragedy happened. Dougherty shockingly allowed a young girl to be placed in the custody of a convicted murderer. The heartbreaking outcome.
Years of beating, starvation, and weeks on end of confinement.
The word horrific is not sufficient.
Dougherty's excuse? He had no recollection of knowing about the murderer's background. No recollection. Tell Kevin Dougherty, no more excuses. Keep our children safe.
Now, Chris, you have looked deeply into this ad and the really scandalous allegations in the ad that he, in a decision on the court, you know, allowed a young child to be abused. Can you set the record straight on this?
Yeah, so here's what happened. In 2002, this was a case involving a 10-year-old girl who had been truant from school, and the judge did indeed decide that she should stay with her aunt in 2002. The thing is that nobody told Judge Dougherty, and this was at a proceeding where the girl's family was in the room along with child welfare workers. Nobody told the judge that there was this allegation in the past. So, you know, judges have to rely on the representations made to them in their courts. They don't go out and investigate this stuff, on their own. So he made that decision. There were subsequent, supposedly checks into this young girl's welfare. The thing is that if you're going to assign blame, and blame was assigned, there was a lawsuit stemming from all this. I mean, I think the real culpability here lies with the officials who were, you know, coming to his court and supposedly checking on the conditions in his home. I will say that the RSLC has said, and this is true, that there was a subsequent court proceeding involving this young girl's brother in late 2003, in which the judge was told by the family, hey, there is a, there was this criminal conviction in the 1980s against this woman. And the judge's response at that time was, well, we need to go look into this. Go look into this. And if there's a problem here, if this girl is not in a safe environment, we'll take action. And from all indications, no action was ever taken. So, to the extent that this ad suggests that Judge Dougherty did something wrong, I don't see that there's a lot of evidence that he could have that he did. To the extent that you may think, well, Judge Dougherty should have done more than what he did, that's a more subjective judgment call on people's part.
This Republican State Leadership Committee, who's the funder? Where do they get their money for ads like this?
Yeah, they get their money from a whole lot of places. This is a national organization that weighs in on a lot of races at the state level, as their name suggests, all across the country. So they get a lot of money from corporate interests. The Koch brothers, who a lot of people know as being sort of conservative financiers of much of the conservative movement in this country, they are among its supporters. So, but there's a lot of money coming from a lot of different places. One of the more active industries I've noted just in the past year is the natural gas industry, both locally and nationally. Although those folks say, hey, we don't give money with an expectation of any particular ad in any particular race. This is just kind of what we do.
And of course, that relates to Marcellus Shale and natural gas drilling in Pennsylvania. Chris, let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Chris Potter, the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, kind of a catch up on what's been happening here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He's a staff writer who's been covering the judicial election for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And we just played an ad criticizing one of the candidates for a state Supreme Court, Kevin Daugherty. And you can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Chris, we should say that, and I understand that this is the only race in the country for a state Supreme Court, and we are unusual in Pennsylvania in that we do elect our judicial officer, people that serve on in the courts.
Right. Yeah, it is unusual, but gosh, is it entertaining.
Okay. Well, you said it. I do want to play another ad, and this is an ad attacking Pennsylvania Supreme Court candidate Ann Covey. Now, this one is paid for by Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform. And again, she's another candidate running for state Supreme Court. Let's give it a listen.
Supreme Court candidate Ann Covey has a problem. Covey says she authored numerous published legal articles. She didn't. Then Covey filed improper information on campaign finance forms. Now, for giving dishonest answers, Covey is the only candidate for Supreme Court rated not recommended by the Bar Association. Pennsylvania needs judges whose honesty is unquestioned, not Ann Covey.
Let me get you to respond to that. And I should add, Chris, that actually that is true, that the bar did gave her a not recommended. It gets a little complicated, but what's the takeaway from this ad?
Yeah, so this ad, I should say, too, I believe is not airing. It's certainly not airing here in Pittsburgh.
And I believe I saw it. I believe I saw it on TV. But
it has aired in the past. I think they have since replaced it with one focusing entirely on that last charge, the not recommended. And that is true. I mean, Judge Covey is not recommended by the Bar Association. And as you said, it's a little complicated, but it stems from her 2011 race for Commonwealth Court, where she took out an ad attacking her Democratic rival, Kathy Buchvar. When candidates run, they sign a pledge. When judicial candidates run, they sign a pledge with the Bar Association, pledging not to engage in false and misleading ads. And the Bar Association felt that ad violated the pledge. Judge Covey has not backed away from that ad, and I think that goes a long way towards explaining why she's not endorsed this go-round. The other allegations in that ad, I mean, the one about the campaign finance stuff is pretty weak tea, to be honest with you. I think the language is improper information. I mean, essentially what she did is she listed, or her campaign listed, some contributions that were supposed to go in one part of the report on another part of the report. And it's just, you know, I mean, we're talking a handful of contributions. I see mistakes like this on campaign finance reports not infrequently. They can very easily be corrected. It's just kind of a weak charge. It's technically true, but I don't think it certainly doesn't speak to anybody's integrity as far as I can see. The first allegation involving the authorship of these articles, I don't think there's ever been – Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform, I don't think, has ever really said what that's supposed to be about. They haven't really offered substantiation for it. The campaign of Judge Covey has threatened legal action stemming from that charge in particular. And as I say, I think that ad has since come down just in the past couple days.
And who is Pennsylvanians for Judicial Reform?
Yeah, it's a great name, isn't it?
Whatever that means. Like, yeah.
Yeah, nobody's ever for Pennsylvanians for keeping the courts exactly the same way they are now. It's an organization funded heavily by a political committee that represents the Philadelphia Trial Lawyers Association. Also, some union organizations have contributed to it as well. The Pennsylvania State Education Association, which represents teachers unions or teachers across the state, and also the Service Employees International Union. So that's where the bulk of their money is coming from.
And my understanding is that the chair is Mark Siegel, who was he was a lieutenant governor in Pennsylvania, also headed up the Democratic Party in Pennsylvania.
That's correct, and now works as a lobbyist in Harrisburg.
So what we played the Kevin Dougherty, and as you said, you know, I guess there's some pressure to remove some false and misleading ads, but
right.
how do you police this stuff if it's really just off the rails?
Yeah, this is tricky. So, and what you're seeing happen right now, and it's kind of outside the public view, but especially with respect to that Dougherty ad, the campaign for Judge Dougherty and the Republican State Leadership Committee are basically trading letters that they're sending to TV stations across the state, because the Dougherty campaign sent a letter to these stations saying, hey, these ads are false and you should pull them down. And the RSLC is saying, no, they're true. And so there's this kind of war going back and forth between these guys. And it's sort of the job of the TV stations to kind of figure out
really
what they're supposed to
but
do.
But that's where they get their money.
It is, and it's complicated. You know, I mean, generally speaking, the FCC has rules about this stuff, and the FCC rules basically encourage, you know, a sort of err on the side of airing the ad because it's important for people to, you know, hear the claims and counterclaims made by political candidates. This is a somewhat different case because there's not the same kind of protection for an ad put by an outside interest as opposed to the candidate themselves. So there's a lot of sort of give and take here. And I think a lot of these issues aren't entirely settled, in part because so much of these FCC laws are decades old and the rise of these outside groups is a fairly new phenomenon in politics.
Now, there's been one debate between the candidates and then we've got these, you know, 30-second either attack ads or ones that are more biographical ads with the candidates introducing themselves to the public. And I think in this state, if I can use myself and people that I know, you go into to vote and you're kind of scratching your head trying to figure out who do I vote for, especially based on some of these ads, if that's all you've got.
Right. And I mean, I think the tricky thing here, too, is none of these candidates, I mean, this is a you wouldn't know it to look at the ads, but it's a fairly strong field of candidates. They're, other than Judge Covey, who we mentioned, they're all either recommended or highly recommended by the Bar Association. There are no kind of clownish figures here. Even Judge Covey, we should say, the Bar Association has generally said good things about the quality of her jurisprudence and the opinions that she issues. I've written about this a little myself last week, and I mean, since they're all pretty decent judges, I mean, one of the things you can do is go into the booth and say, well, some of these folks are running as Democrats, some are running as Republicans, and one of the best predictors of how a judge will act on the bench is their party affiliation. It's kind of an uncomfortable thing for people to admit. But if you believe that, you know, government should have an expansive role in our economy and that we want our judges to sort of be socially more liberal than conservative, you can vote for a Democrat and feel there's a pretty good chance that they'll rule in that way. Conversely, if you feel the opposite, you can vote for a Republican and have some assurance at least that that you won't be burned down the road. Although it's easy for hearts to get broken. Just ask any conservative about John Roberts on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, indeed, and they certainly have voiced their complaints about that. At least some of them. There's another campaign that I saw. It's called Make History Campaign. So you vote for Republican Covey, Democrat Donahue, Republican Olson. They're all women, and an effort to put more women. I guess that would give them a majority on the state Supreme Court.
Yeah, and interestingly, this is one of those weird little wrinkles that I've written about, but nobody I think can really answer it. Women actually predominate on the state Superior Court. I think there are 15 judges on the Superior Court, and I believe 11 of them are women currently. And there's a sort of spirited debate about why that is. One theory just being that women are people want change in their courts, and they don't necessarily know a lot about judicial elections, but they see a name of a woman, and they associate that with change. And so that's why they pulled the lever for that candidate.
Or we're just nicer than men.
that
just could kidding.
Well be.
Just kidding.
I'm not going to weigh in on that one. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that's, of course, again, there are partisan implications even to that campaign, right? Because two of those three candidates are Republicans. So, you know, you can't really escape that stuff in a partisan judicial election like we have here in Pennsylvania.
Do negative ads depress turnout? Do you know
reporting? I don't know from my reporting. What I've sort of heard anecdotally from people is that these ads are really about firing up their base, right? I just saw an article about this on Politico earlier today. What motivates voters here in the 21st century of America is not so much, I believe in my candidate, but I'm afraid of what that other party may be up to if they win. So I'm going to vote for my guys to stop their guys, and that's what motivates people. And so a lot of these, I think my suspicion is a lot of these negative ads play the same sort of thing. Don't vote for these Republicans because they're bad on pro-choice, as you say, the Democrat. Don't vote for these Democrats because they're in the pockets of special interests, say the Republicans. And so that seems to be the way these campaigns break down.
What's a typical turnout, especially on an off-year election for the courts? Have you looked at that, Chris?
I haven't, I'm afraid. I'm sure maybe to keep myself from being depressed about how many people actually read my articles.
You're taking this very personally.
I do. I do. I do.
And so there's less than a week before the race. Do you imagine these kind of a ramping up of some of these ads? Are they going to continue apace?
I would not be surprised, put it this way, I wouldn't be surprised if some completely out of left field thing drops in the next couple days. This will sort of be a counterintuitive thing for me to say based on our previous conversation, but I've actually been surprised that there aren't more of these ads and that they haven't actually been even worse. I was really sort of geared for something much, much, much worse. Because there's fodder for it. I mean, if you look, any Superior Court candidate, and three of these judges are from Superior Court, rule on appeals from criminals and stuff like that after post-conviction relief. Almost any of them, you could find somebody who they found a problem with the prosecution, and that's the kind of case that that ads make a lot of. He let so and so off out of prison. You know, I've seen a harsher ad from Westmoreland County for a Westmoreland County judicial race out here in Western Pennsylvania than I have for these statewide folks.
Well, interesting. We're going to end on that note, Chris Potter. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it as well. And he's a staff writer covering the election, the Pennsylvania election for the Supreme Court for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. John Baer waiting in the wings, and we'll be talking about the budget standoff here in Pennsylvania. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The budget standoff in Pennsylvania is in its fourth month, with Pennsylvania Governor Democrat Tom Wolf staring down Republican leaders in the legislature. At issue are a bunch of issues, including taxes, liquor sales, and pensions. We asked John Baer to join us. He's political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. You can read his blog, Baer Growls, at philly.com. And John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. Thank you for the invite.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, talking about the Pennsylvania budget such as it is. John, have we been here before 4 months and still no budget?
Well, Marty, it's sort of like Sisyphus meets Groundhog Day. there's nothing new. You and I could have had you could just replay the tape we ran 4 months ago on where we stand. And in fact, there's not much new since March, when Governor Wolf first introduced this budget.
Does that mean that people aren't talking to each other?
No. There's
okay.
Lots.
Okay, just checking.
There's lots of talking, but there isn't lots of progress. We're still pretty much at a stalemate.
Is that because we have a new governor who's kind of holding his ground on what he wants, and you've got also some new leadership in legislature? They're holding their ground?
Yes, that's exactly why it is. And, I mean, there's the problem is this. I mean, to fix what is wrong with Pennsylvania in terms of its deficit and in terms of its inequity in funding all schools at a fair level, Governor Wolf is absolutely right. It's going to take a lot of new revenue to do that. But the Republican legislature, with majority in both the House and the Senate, has said from the beginning they will not support any broad-based tax increases, and that means sales tax or personal income tax. And in order to get the sort of revenue that is required to fix the deficit and to make school funding more equitable, those are the only places where you can get enough money. And so we're absolutely stuck. The answer now, as the answer was in March, is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And working that out has been an ongoing nightmare.
And I do want to pick up on all of that. And you've written about this, John, but I also remember Tom Wolfe talking about patriotism and doing the right thing and sort of a civic duty. As you said, the deficit is real, needs to be addressed. Inequity in school funding is real. That needs to be addressed. He was kind of appealing to the angels of our higher nature or some version of that?
Yeah, I mean, he wants to do the right thing. The problem is there aren't the votes to do the right thing. So then you have a choice. You can either go on the path that we are on and do nothing, or you can do a little bit of the right thing. And so far, at least, although the governor has compromised somewhat, has offered some version of pension reform, some version of liquor reform, which are both major issues with Republicans, but the Republicans are saying, nope, not enough. We're still going to stay where we are.
Do you think the governor was wrong to veto the entire Republican budget rather than doing line item vetoes?
Well, Marty, I don't know if you saw this. There was a story in the New York Times this week on the state of Illinois, the only other state in the nation that does not have a budget. And they have the exact reverse situation that we have. They have a Republican governor with a Democratic legislature. And in Illinois, the Republican governor is new, and he's a wealthy businessman, just like in Pennsylvania. And they are deadlocked. The difference is they approved their education funding, $7 billion in Illinois, which is even more than ours for basic education. So there's not much pressure there. And in fact, I mean, to be candid, there's not a lot of pressure here. You don't see the kind of demonstrations that we have seen in the past. You don't hear a lot of noise from the general public because in most cases, people don't yet feel much effect from this. This is not to take away from the third-party nonprofit vendors who do social services. They are suffering, no question. Not to take away from the 20% of school districts that are identified as distressed without state funding. They don't have reserves, so they're borrowing to get the money that they need to stay open. Some of them are threatening to close. But the difficulty here is that if there are 20% districts that are doing that, that means that 80% of the districts are okay because they do have reserves. They don't have the same problems that urban districts and districts with low tax bases have. So for the vast majority of the state, there is not a crisis in terms of schools. In terms of our finances, we keep being downgraded. Our obligation bonds keep being downgraded, which makes it harder to borrow and more expensive to borrow. So we're just adding to that sort of macro fiscal problem while we wait for the other problems of social services and schools to grow.
Well, we did some shows about this, and while there are some districts that have some reserves, it's not like they're not worried or complaining about the fact that they have to dip into these reserves and wondering if we're going to go into 2016. You know, those reserves are going to dry up at some point.
Well, that's right, and we're almost to the point where the people that prepare budgets for the coming fiscal year are getting ready to do that, and we haven't yet resolved this one. So take away the reserves, keep the deficit, and you're going to have a problem that grows rather than, if this doesn't get resolved quickly, you're going to have like a double problem coming.
Well, taxes is one of the things. The governor talked about raising income taxes, Marcella Shale tax, and some other taxes as well. Where does that stand? He gave a little bit, although he seemed to add to the Shale tax. Where does that stand, John?
The Shale tax is a mess because when the governor campaigned a year ago, he said we can get $1 billion, the majority of it for schools from sales tax. That is no longer factually the case because the market has dried up a little bit, gas prices have dropped, and there's not $1 billion there to be had. There might be in the neighborhood of $300-400 million, for a full year.
Right.
But, I mean, what Republicans are saying privately anyway is, look, there might be a way to structure a tax that prepares the state to cash in on that industry going forward. Let's assume the industry is going to grow and not continue to recede, and the prices will eventually stabilize and increase. So there is some willingness to look at a tax like that. the sales tax issue, again, maybe a little bit. There is some willingness on the Republican side to start looking at things that are now exempt from the sales tax and maybe pick up some revenue for there. There's also talk about expanding gaming, which is always the refuge of a political coward. If you don't want to vote for taxes, you vote for sin taxes. You tax cigarettes more. You introduce more gaming. These are not sustainable things, but they get you out of the hole of the moment.
You mean like internet game, you know, sports betting online, something like that?
Sports, actually, I always say we ought to legalize sports betting. All our problems would be over. There doesn't seem to be an appetite for that. But yes, expanded internet gaming, there's a proposal to put slot machines at airports. I don't know what that's about, but I mean, supposedly that would.
While you're waiting for your flight to arrive, right?
Right. While you're waiting for your delayed sign to leave and all of that, go throw some money into the pot. So there's lots of stuff that's milling around out there, and who is able to draw it together is the big question.
Now, the Republicans, they're talking about things like pension reform. They're talking about privatizing liquor sales in Pennsylvania. I mean, is that what they're holding out for?
Sure. And those are big union issues in both cases. Major unions are opposed to both. The governor is an ally of major unions. He has given a little bit, and Democrats don't like it, saying that, yeah, we ought to do something on pensions, and it might not be favorable with unions, particularly teachers' unions, and yeah, we ought to do something on liquor to open that up a little bit. But a full privatization doesn't seem likely, and a full pension cure doesn't seem likely. So, again, you got to take what you can get. It is the politics is the practice of the possible, not the ideal.
Let me ask you, because, I mean, the state has to be taking in money. People are paying sales taxes and other taxes as well, so there is revenue coming in. So what part of our government in Pennsylvania is being funded, and what part? I mean, clearly schools and some of these social service agencies aren't, but who is?
Well, virtually everything else. We have not done as Ohio has done. Ohio closed down its statewide museum system, for example. Ohio is no longer paying lottery winners who win more than $600. There's some poor schmo in Illinois that won $250,000 in July and is suing to try to get at it.
Oh, really?
But we are not yet to that stage of closing down parks or closing down other services. All particularly vital health and safety services, you know, police, hospitals, all of that is in place. And you're right, money keeps coming in. A lot of money isn't going out. I have a secret suspicion that they're storing all this money up and then hoping to pay down the deficit with the interest.
Wow, really? I
mean, I'm kidding.
Sometimes I don't know with you, John Baer. Let me reintroduce you. That's John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, someone we often call up to help us understand Pennsylvania politics. And in this portion of the show, we are talking about the budget standoff between the legislature and the governor. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. What do you want your government to do? How about the legislature, John? Is that currently being paid for?
You betcha. The legislature, Marty, as you know, also has a stash of reserves, hundreds of millions of dollars of your tax dollars put into accounts that they draw interest from. They have spent those down since July because they're paying themselves and their staffs. Now, three of the four caucuses are getting loans from banks. Guess who's paying for the origination fees and the interest on that? And the fourth caucus, the House of Democrats, went to the Treasury Department and said, hey, look, we'd like a little stopgap money. So they're getting money directly from the Treasury, which is ironic because the Treasury just denied a loan to the Erie School District, which is threatening to close. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats oppose a stopgap bill to do the whole state. In other words, there are proposals to do stopgap spending, which would allow schools to be paid and allow social services to be paid while the budget talks go on.
Now I'm really mad.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. You shouldn't call me. You get depressed every time.
No, I don't. Let me get Rick from Warminster to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Rick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, a couple of points. Thanks a lot, Marty.
Sure.
I appreciate a good discussion.
Thanks.
It seems to me also there's three things going on. Number one, the federal government sends specifically earmarked funds for schools, and then the state comes up and is supposed to match them. I'm told they're being held. They have not gone and been dispersed. So they're being held, the federal funds. Secondly, the county does the assessment, in many cases, on the property taxes, but yet the property taxes are collected down at the township level. So the correlation between the education and the property taxes seems to be linked. So those two seem to be linked. You know, the county does the assessment. Why don't we have, like other states, where they have county schools, like I came from Fairfax County, Virginia? You don't have all the other entities being involved.
Rick, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Can you answer that question, John Bear?
Yeah, Rick's absolutely right. And the reason we don't is the same reason we don't have a lot of other things, and that is we are the least progressive state in the Northeast and one of the least progressive in America. Why we need 500 school districts, separate school districts, is a mystery to me, much like why we need 253 lawmakers is a mystery to me. But that's Pennsylvania. That's where we are. And there are a lot of ways that all of these problems could be made better, but guess who's in charge of making them better? That would be your legislature.
Thinking about privatizing liquor sales, I mean, this is something that Governor Corbett tried to do and was unsuccessful. And gosh, how many times have we talked about this, John Bear, on this show? But nonetheless, here it is back again.
Right. And every Republican governor since Governor Thornburg back in the 70s has tried this without any success. And Governor Corbett, I'd remind you, had a Republican majority in both the House and the Senate and couldn't get it done. I mean, it's a very contentious issue. And it's not, I mean, I don't believe that if you poll Pennsylvanians and ask them what are the top three issues they're most concerned about, state stores will not show up, period.
Right. Right.
It will come in at 1, 2, 3%. But if you ask people, would you like privatized liquor stores, they say, yes, we would. So it's one of those issues that doesn't really impact anybody's life in a meaningful way. You'd kind of like to have it. It doesn't make a lot of sense for the state to have a monopoly on all levels of retail and wholesale booze. Utah is the only other state in the nation that does that. But it's not one of those grab you issues. I think politically and symbolically, it would be extraordinarily beneficial for the governor to do something on liquor, because he would be the first governor ever to make any kind of a dent in that monopoly. And I think it'd be extremely popular.
Interesting. So how does this movie end?
Well, I mean, I literally said then and have said ever since that it has to end with an enormous compromise on both sides that will come out. Nobody will get everything they want. Everybody will get a little bit of something they want. Both sides will stand up and say this is a win-win for the people of Pennsylvania. But in fact, it'll just be a political compromise. That's the way you settle this stuff. The difference, Marty, is that in the old days, and in the old days, I mean, since I've been involved in this, and they are pretty old, there always were leaders who were willing to compromise, who had some control over their caucuses, and who could say, look, this is all we can get right now. We can come back next year, but right now we need to do this. That seems to be missing in this current batch of leaders. Three of the four principal players are new in their positions. I mean, the governor is new. The majority leader in the House is new. The speaker in the House is new in that role, relatively new. And so it makes it very difficult. Plus, you have a different nature in the legislature. It is more conservative than it has been in a long, long time. People don't want anything. You can't trade a bridge for a vote anymore. And so it makes it very tough. Ultimately, though, there has to be some sort of compromise. It's the only way out of this.
Well, stay tuned. John Bear, as always, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times and getting us all depressed. No, I'm kidding. I always learn a lot. No, thanks a lot for joining us.
Marty, thank you.
And John Bear, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. You can read his blog, Bear Growls, at philly.com. Also spoke with Chris Potter, staff writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And we began with Kathleen Kane's spokesman, Chuck Ardo, talking a lot about politics and Pennsylvania in this hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show. Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.